This will be an interview with Moorhead, Minnesota educator Dr. Olin J. Storvick, S-T-O-R-V-I-C-K, member of the Concordia College faculty since 1955, professor of classical languages, chairperson of the department, former longtime associate academic dean at Concordia College from 1979 to 1985. This is a part of the 1985-86 Oral History Project of the Moorhead, Minnesota State University Heritage Education Commission and the Northwest Minnesota Historical Center. As recorder-interviewer, I'm J. L. Rendahl, R-E-N-D-A-H-L, of 415 South 7th Street, Moorhead, Minnesota, Emeritus Vice President of Concordia College, Moorhead. The time is approximately 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, October 22nd, 1986. The place is Dr. Storvick's office in the library building on the Concordia College campus. The oral history agreement form giving ownership of this recording to the Northwest Minnesota Historical Center has been signed by the interviewer and the interviewee. The length of the interview will probably be approximately 1 hour. Now, to complete this introduction, Dr. Storvick, will you give your full name, your home address, your position, your background, as suggested in the interview guide you have before us?
My name is Olin John Storvick. My home address, 1310 South 6th Street in Moorhead, Minnesota. My present position at Concordia College is professor of classics and chair of the department. My family consists of my wife, Ruth, maiden name Struxmus, and we have five children, all gone at this time. The oldest, Helen Louise, now married to the Reverend David M. Saudi.
Would you want to spell Saudi, please?
S-A-U-D-E.
And to go back, Struxness.
Struxness, S-T-R-U-X-N-E-S-S.
Thank you.
Her father, Ruth's father, was a longtime pastor in the Lutheran Church, originally in the Norwegian Lutheran Church in America, and later the ELC. Most recent parish was in Belgrade, Minnesota. Both Ruth's mother and father are now dead. Returning to the family, all of our children were educated in the Moorhead Public Schools. Our first two were born in Ann Arbor, and the last three were born in St. Ansgar Hospital. The oldest, as I say, is Helen. She graduated from Moorhead High School in 1968, graduated from Concordia College in 1972, then married David Saudi. He had finished Concordia the year before and was a student at Luther Theological Seminary in St. Paul. In 1975, he finished the seminary, was ordained into the ministry, and accepted a call in Canada. There were some years in southern Saskatchewan, and presently he is pastor of a Lutheran church in Edmonton. They have two children, Kirsten, K-J-E-R-S-T-E-N, and Eric, E-R-I-K. Our second child, Ralph Edward Storvick, graduated from Concordia in 1975, then married Karen Lund, who had graduated from Concordia the year before. Ralph then attended medical school at the University of Minnesota, did a residency in internal medicine in La Crosse, Wisconsin, held a Mayo Fellowship at Mayo in Rochester, and presently is in practice in Mankato, where he's director of the nephrology clinic and in internal medicine. They have two children, Christopher, currently 4 years old, and Hans, almost one. Third child is Solveig, S-O-L-V-E-I-G. She finished Moorhead High School in 1975, went to Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, graduated in 1979, then was married to a man who had graduated from Luther College the year before. Stephen Polleyi, P-O-L-L-E-I. He was then a student in medicine at Washington University in St. Louis, and is currently a resident in radiology in Albuquerque. They have one daughter, Marit. Our fourth child was Karen, K-A-R-E-N. She finished Morehead High School, graduated from Augustana College in Sioux Falls, majored in nursing, minor in Greek, and accepted a commission in the Navy as a nurse, and is currently Lieutenant J.G. in the Navy Nurse Corps stationed at Great Lakes. A year ago, she married a fellow Navy nurse, James Markert. They are both stationed in Great Lakes, although due to be sent to Okinawa shortly. Our youngest child, Eric, E-R-I-C, Starvik, graduated from Luther College in 1985, is currently a second-year student in the medical school of the University of Minnesota, and this past summer married Diane Requey, R-E-Q-U-E, of Alexandria, Minnesota, and also a Luther College graduate. That is our current family. We came to Morehead in 1955, at that time with two children, Helen and Rolf. We came actually from Athens, Greece. I had been that year a Fulbright scholar at the American School of Classical Studies in Athens and was looking for a teaching position. I had accepted a position at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island for the coming year when I received a letter from the then president of Concordia, J.L. Knutson. And in his usual terse style, in about two sentences, said, "If you want to teach at Concordia, send me your dossier." So I did, and thereupon was offered a position, and my wife and I knew, had known for a long time, that we really wanted to be in this part of the country, and I wanted to teach in a liberal arts college, and particularly a college of the church, because we had both graduated from Luther College, and so Concordia, we thought, was an appropriate place for us. And so Brown University found somebody else, and we came to Concordia in 1955 and have been here ever since. All my teaching has been at Concordia College, with the exception of teaching fellowship, of course, in graduate school at the University of Michigan, and a one-year appointment as visiting professor of Greek at Luther Theological Seminary in St. Paul, 1977-1978. As to my own family background, I'm the oldest of four children. Father comes from the Storviks, really centered down in Freeborn County, down around Albert Lea, where the old Storvik and Updahl farms, original farms, were. My mother, Helen Weeks Storvik, was actually born in Clay County, down by Sabin, I learned later, although the family lived most of the time up at Thief River Falls. Both mother and father were college graduates. Father of Luther College in the class of 1921. My mother, belonging to an old synod parish, could not, of course, go to Luther College because Luther did not admit women in those days. So she went to St. Olaf. She had had two older brothers finish, one finished Park Region and one finished St. Olaf. And she finished St. Olaf in 1921. They both accepted teaching positions, unknown to each other at that time, down in Canton, South Dakota, at the Lutheran Academy, Canton Lutheran Academy, where actually J.M. Brown was at that time the president. So they didn't actually meet there. They met at in Thief River Falls because the Luther College band was on a great tour, and they stopped in Thief River Falls, and my mother was one of the people on the serving committee, and she knew somebody was teaching at Canton, and so she found out who it was. They both, I think, enjoyed their teaching at Canton very much. But the next year, my mother went to China as a missionary in the girls' school in Hunan Province, south of Peking, with Frieda Nielsen, whom we all know from Concordia College. In piecing together the story from my perspective, I suspect that after Mother went to China, Father realized that that was the woman he wanted. And so they conducted some correspondence and approached the church, and the church was willing to release Mother if they would repay the fare. So they repaid the steamship fare both ways, and Mother came back. They became engaged, and the next year Mother taught at Concordia. She taught English. This would be 1923-24, and was house mother to a dormitory that we used to call South Hall, and is now called Academy. I believe that she enjoyed that year very much, and I've seen in her effect some letters of commendation from the then president, Osborne. At any rate, Father had decided that he really wanted to go back into the dairy business, or the butter business, which his father was also in. And so he went to work at Iowa State, and then he was a butter grader, Chicago Mercantile Exchange in Chicago. And so I was actually born in Chicago in 1925. Three years later, they moved back to Ames, and Father continued his graduate work at Ames. And at Ames, Father continued his graduate work in dairy chemistry, dairy plant management at Iowa State, now Iowa State University. And in 1931, we moved to Mason City. So all of my public education was in Mason City, Iowa, first through the 12th grade. And I realize now that I had the benefit of a very fine educational system. Looking back at it, there was sufficient industry to support a very good school system, a community of maybe 23,000-25,000 when I was there, and simply a good, very good public education, including at that time 4 years of Latin, and our senior year mathematics and physics courses were taught by somebody from the junior college. Indicates something of the strength. Also, I think in my family background was a strong interest in education. Both my parents were college graduates, and they both valued education. I remember our dining room having those glass front bookcases surrounding the dining room table, and on top of it was the Webster's Unabridged Dictionary, and when there was a discussion between mother and father about the meaning of the word, father reached for the big dictionary. So there was a great encouragement to schooling. Remember, I was one of two boys in the room whose fathers insisted that they wear shirt and tie to elementary school. But and Father, I think, enjoyed his teaching, although he did not stay with it. I remember he used to say, well, I don't know what you're going to do, but I think you'll enjoy working with people. You'll find that rewarding. And I think you ought to teach for a year or two, regardless of what you're going to do. Well, it turned out that all of us became teachers and never left it, but so much of for that. My mother, later on, when the children were gone, after I left home, Mason City, they moved to Wadena, Minnesota, for a brief stay in Waterloo, and Mother did return to teaching in the Wadena High School, teaching English and Latin until her retirement. But the strong interest in education, used to kid my mother that it was easier to come home with a good grade than to explain why I didn't have one. My activities in school were mostly, I suppose, music and athletics. You could not be in both band and choir in that high school, and so I specialized in the band, but I got permission to play football too. And the same thing continued in college. At that time, the Luther Band practiced during the noon hour, and so one could be in both football and band, which I did in college as well. I graduated from Mason City, Iowa High School, second in the class of 301, and that was in 1943. We thought it a good idea that I begin my college right away, so I went off to Luther College that summer to get what courses I could during the summer before military service, which we knew was coming. Over there I met Alf Borge, and Alf Borge and I decided we would enlist together, so we went down and enlisted in the Army. I really wanted to be in one of those Navy programs, V-5 or V-12, but my eyes weren't good enough, but the Army took me. and I had hopes of going to one of the Army schools, ASTP, in engineering or something, but they said I had to have my basic training, so I got sent to Anniston, Alabama, Fort McClellan. I did my basic training, and in the process was accepted for one of those schools, but when I finished my basic training, there weren't any vacancies, so I got sent to the South Pacific for the better part of 3 years, ultimately with 27th Infantry Division, and was discharged in early 1946, January 1946, was on Okinawa, and received a Purple Heart on Okinawa. At any rate, I was most interested in getting back to college, and so I went back down to Luther College in 1946 and graduated in 1949. In college, I suppose, like many people, I had thought that I wanted to do what my father did. So I followed his interest in chemistry, with studies in chemistry and mathematics and a little bit of physics. But I'd had 4 years of Latin in high school, and out of curiosity, I thought I wanted to continue that. My father had had the old Luther College curriculum, which was really designed for pre-seminary students, and so he had Latin and Greek and philosophy and history, with some math and science, and I was attracted to the study of Greek, and so simply for the fun of it, I signed up for the Greek class. And so my college year, I suppose one would have to say I was undecided. I thought most of the time that I was going to be a chemist. I was, during those years, both in military service and in college, thinking strongly of the parish ministry, but was ultimately unable to decide that I really was called to that. And I was being funded under the GI Bill, but there was a separate program for those who've been wounded in action, and so I was able to get one more year in after my college if I got a degree. I was still thinking of seminary, and I learned that it was possible for me in a year and a summer to get my master's degree in Greek at the University of Michigan. So we decided to do that. In the meantime, my wife and I were married, and we went off to Ann Arbor, where two of my Luther College professors in classics, Qualley and Hotfoot, Qualley Q-U-A-L-L-E-Y and Hotfoot H-A-A-T-V-E-D-T, had done their graduate work. I was still a bit uncertain about theological seminary, and had thought a little bit about college teaching. When I was in college, I talked to the head of the education department about secondary teaching, and he gave me that long list of courses I had to take, and I already had more than I could take anyway, and so I dismissed that idea. While we were at Michigan that year, the announcement came out to apply for fellowships for the following year, and so I did, and I was awarded one, so we decided just simply to stay on in Ann Arbor. And a fellowship one after another, and my wife was working before and between the first two children for the University of Michigan, and later for the Kaiser Fraser Export Corporation. And so we continued in that vein at the University of Michigan. While I was there, I came to know the Lutheran campus pastor, Henry Yoder, and he put in my mind the idea that I should teach in one of the colleges. I suppose until that time I had never given much thought to where college faculty came from. He actually was trying to recruit me to teach at Wittenberg University, where he was a regent. So that was in my thinking then. I knew that liberal arts college was what I wanted. I did not quite have the interest that some of my colleagues in graduate school in classics had to become a great specialist in some minor area. I don't mean minor area, single area of classical studies, that is, one author or one area. I liked the idea of moving both from Latin to Greek, from prose to poetry, including history and archaeology, and a liberal arts college was the place where that was most possible. I also knew from the work that my undergrad profs had done in archaeology that I had some interest there, And so in my fifth year there, I applied for a Fulbright and was awarded a Fulbright, so we went off to Athens and study there. And then that brought us, as I indicated earlier, from there to Concordia. My year in Athens was a marvelous year. We were a small group of about a dozen all graduate students in classics from all over the country. And we were spent most of our time in the field visiting sites under the tutelage of some very fine classical archaeologists. I unfortunately, at the end of my Fulbright year, was running out of money. I wasn't able to continue on there except the second year, which would have given me field experience in classical archaeology. And so we decided it was time to go to work and also time to try to finish the dissertation. My first position, as I said earlier, was here at Concordia. At that time, the department really consisted of one person, Charles H. Scarlett, S-K-A-L-E-T, who had come here in 1923. The teaching load in Latin and Greek had increased, and so they had had one or two people here part-time, or more than one department. That is, Martha Sealseth taught a little bit of Latin one year and Spanish, but she was really needed in Spanish. So it was with my arrival in 1955 that the department moved to full-time people. Scarlett had a strong reputation as a teacher of Greek, as I later learned when I came here. And so when I arrived, Scarlett said in his way, "Well, I've been doing the Greek, so why don't you take the Latin?" So that was it. Although my preponderance of my graduate work had been in Greek, I had had a lot of work in Latin, and that was fine with me. I should tell a little digress to tell a little story about my appointment to Concordia. After I had signed to come to Concordia, I was wondering what kind of a place it was, because I'd never been here. The Luther football team had played the University of North Dakota, but somehow we never played Concordia. When I was in Athens in the spring of the year, there was opportunity to travel, and so another fellow and I took off through the Middle East to Lebanon and to Syria and to Amman, Jordan, and into Jerusalem, coming from the east into the then West Bank under Jordanian control. And I got to Jerusalem, and the director of the school where we were staying, the American Schools of Oriental Research on Saleh Adeen Street, was Dr. Frank Cross of Harvard, and his wife registered us in that little hostel where we could stay. And she said, she asked about us, and I explained that I was a Lutheran and so on. She said, I have two Lutheran pastors who are staying upstairs. They're students in Germany. And so we met them at supper, and one of them turned out to be Lloyd Svensby, who was at that time studying in Germany. After his work at Luther Seminary on a graduate study grant at a German university, and had found his way down to, with another friend, down to Jerusalem. And I remember asking Lloyd when I was in Jerusalem, "What am I getting into at Concordia?" Because there had been some word about in the church in the latter years of Brown's administration. And I didn't want to get into a place that was having civil war. And Lloyd said, "That's all taken care of, and I think you'll enjoy it up there." And one other incident confirmed that. One of our students was traveling on a ship between Piraeus and Cyprus. Piraeus, P-E-I-R-A-E-U-S, the port city of Athens, and Cyprus, C-Y-P-R-U-S. She was going to join the University of Missouri dig on Cyprus, and she did, and then came back and said, "Where is it that you're going to teach?" And I said, "It's Concordia College." And she said, "Well, I met a Concordia faculty member on that ship, and if they're all like he is, you will really like it there." And it turned out that it was Sigurd Munjeld who was traveling.
Can you spell that?
Munjeld, M-U-N-D-H-J-E-L-D. Many years, of course, the leading professor in the Department of Mathematics and chair of the department for a long time here. And, truth to tell, both scholar and gentleman. So I began to think that maybe Concordia would be a good place for me after all. I knew from my Luther College classmates who had gone to seminary that their close friends, many of them were from Concordia, and they thought Luther and Concordia were similar institutions. So I came to Concordia not having seen the place ever and not having a place to live. I signed the contract by mail. $3,800 was the first salary. But they allowed us how they had some kind of moving expenses, but they weren't going to pay me moving expenses from Athens, but they would add $200. So I was paid $4,000my first year. And as I say, my position consisted entirely of teaching Latin. I must say that I was not terrified of going into the classroom. I had done a little teaching at the University of Michigan. As a teaching fellow, I felt that I knew my subject, I wanted to teach, and so I must say that I didn't have a particular case of first-day jitters. I remember the first year scholar did not say much. Well, he didn't usually say very much. I thought he might wonder how I was doing, and so I remember the first examination I gave, I thought maybe I better show him what I'm doing. So I showed him a copy, and he kind of nodded, and I went back to work, and that was it. Following summer, I'd saved the money, and so we loaded our belongings into our 48 Chevrolet and went back to Ann Arbor to keep working on my dissertation. I remember the day before we left, I stopped to pick up my mail, and I ran into Scarlett, and he saw my loaded car, and he said, "Well, you're coming back next year, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, of course I am." Faculty evaluation in those days was a bit less formal than it is now. But I suspect there must have been some conversations between Dean Bailey and Scarlett, so my contract was continued for the following years. I was teaching in Old Main in the what we call Main 19 then, the southwest corner room on the second floor. That was the Latin room. Two sections of first year, section of second year, section of third year, and I think one of fourth years, I recall. Good students. At that time, we had a two-year language requirement, so they were fairly large classes. But for 6 years then, I did the Latin, and Scarlett did the Greek. I was in those summers mostly going back to Ann Arbor, 1 year on support from the old brotherhood of the old Evangelical Lutheran Church. Or we saved our money, or Concordia began to have modest stipends for people working on dissertations during the summer. But I knew I needed a longer term to bring that to completion because I'd had a change in topic over what I had submitted initially. And so in 1961-62, I had a grant from the Danforth Foundation, and I spent it there. After I got out there, that fall, Scarlett became ill and never returned to the classroom. So they pieced together Scarlett's position in my absence. I returned in 62. A few years before, I don't remember the exact year, they had passed a rule that one could not be chair of a department beyond 65, and so I had at least entitled become chair of the department before Scarlett's retirement, but in point of fact, of course, he was the leader of the department. I then, by mail, working with Dean Bailey, hired Lloyd Gunderson, who was then a graduate student in history, ancient history, and a pastor outside of Madison. He then joined me in 62, and we were the department for 3 years. Then he took a leave to finish his dissertation at Madison. He returned for 1 year. St. Olaf had a vacancy, and he accepted that vacancy. And a year or so later, we brought back Stanley Iverson. In the year that Gunderson was gone, we brought Iverson, that's I-V-E-R-S-O-N, out of a high school in Arizona. He was a Luther College graduate, and I knew the kind of training he'd had, brought him up here to fill in that 1 year. And then after Gunderson went to St. Olaf, then we waited for Iverson to become available after his graduate work at Vanderbilt. After Scarlett retired, I switched my teaching emphasis from Latin to Greek, and most of my teaching since then has been in the area of Greek. Iverson is, as I, prepared to teach both Latin and Greek, but has had a slightly heavier emphasis in Latin and the teaching of Latin So that works together very well. We continued in that vein until in 77, 78, Luther Seminar asked me to come down for a year to teach Greek, and I was given unsalaried leave by the college and enjoyed that year very much. I returned in 1979. The man who had been dean, Hartigan, H-A-R-T-D-A-G-E-N, for the preceding about 4 years, retired, that is, resigned, and left Concordia, and Gring, who had been here 3 years as assistant academic dean, was named acting dean, and during the year, dean and vice president for academic affairs. He approached me if I would be willing to come over into the associate dean's office for a year on a term appointment. I think he felt that he was fairly new to the faculty, fairly new to the curriculum, and I had served on a number of major committees, the executive committee, and so he asked me to come over. I was happy to do that. I suppose many faculty have some interest in administration, and this was an opportunity for me to test that interest. At that time, the college was facing some things, I think, which also figured in Gring's invitation and my subsequent choice. The college was facing a number of things. We've had a history here of 10-year reviews of the purpose, nature, and mission of the college, which we call the Blueprint Series. We were facing a reaccreditation visit by North Central Association, and we thought that this blueprint process might also result in a curricular change, and those were some of the things that Gring wanted help with. And so those were my major responsibilities, along with the things that normally come to the Associate Dean. So I chaired Concordia's committee preparing for the North Central visit, and along with Lauren Anderson and Walter Brausnitz and David Gring, and that was successful. We received a maximum 10-year reaccreditation. The blueprint process, I think, went well and resulted in the appointment of a 10-person academic commission to look at the curriculum, and Gring asked me to be a member of that. And that report was duly submitted, and the Faculty Senate adopted it, made a few changes, which made a few changes in our curriculum, strengthened, I believe, the liberal arts nature of the place in the core requirements. After 6 years over there, I felt more and more the pull to return to the classroom. I enjoyed my stay. I found Dean Gring extremely competent and congenial to work with, but I decided that I wanted to return to the classroom full time. I had been teaching one course a semester, and Gring invited me to stay as long as I wanted, but understood it and was gracious enough to allow me to return. So in the fall of 1985, I returned to the classroom full time. I'm now, once again, teaching responsibilities primarily in Greek, ancient history, that is the Greek history, and I also teach in the new program which we instituted for freshmen called Principia, a multidisciplinary faculty chosen from a number of departments, a course dealing with justice, introduction for our Concordia freshmen, required of freshmen. I suppose, as I look back on my teaching here, I'm very satisfied. I would not have changed places with anybody. I, indeed, as I suppose other faculty did in those years, where there were not as many faculty as there are now, and there were opportunities to move, and opportunities did come to me to move to a number of different places around the country. But when we looked at them, my wife and I decided that this is the place where we want to live, and this is the place where we want to raise our family, and in that we were not disappointed. My major interest outside of teaching came about in the opportunity to return to archaeology. In 1969, in the fall of 1969, unbeknownst to both of us, Cyrus Running, then of the art department, and I were both invited to bring Concordia College into a group of colleges to do an excavation in northern Galilee. So I was invited by Dean Moe, was a Concordia grad, and I was invited by Tom Crabel, K-R-A-A-B-E-L, then of the University of Minnesota. We approached Carl Bailey about Concordia becoming a member of that expedition to Kibbert Shema, K-H-I-R-B-E-T-S-H-E-M-A, and Carl Bailey listened to us with some interest and said, let me think about it and test it, and 2 months later he called us back into his office and reluctantly said Concordia simply could not afford the fee. That time it was $10,000 a year. Both Cy Running and I nonetheless went on the dig in 1970. Cy as the artist for the dig and I simply as a volunteer. That is the same as any college, 18-year-old college student working in the field. It went very well. It was tough work, hard work, hot work for 6 weeks. But I was a little surprised at the end of it. They invited me to come back the following year as an area supervisor, that is to be in charge of a square with some students working for me. And so I went back in 1971 and 72. Dig was designed to be a three-year dig, and so we kind of finished it. In the meantime, I had not given up the hope that Concordia could become involved, and in my time at in Israel, I came to know Robert J. Bull, who was then director of the American School of Oriental Research in Jerusalem, who was about to enter a dig at Caesarea. And so I approached him, and he was open to Concordia's joining. I came back to Concordia. We invited Bull out to give a lecture, and he did his usual masterful job. I think I had some help from Ryder Tomte, went into Knutson and said, I think we should do this. And so we had approval. At that point, it was $5,000 a season, or $2,500 a year, and that the college could afford. That gave us the right to bring some students to participate in the dig. And that continued then after a year of area supervisor at Caesarea. In 1974, I became a field supervisor, responsible for directing the work in half of the fields of Caesarea. And in the even-numbered years thereafter, have returned every year, except 1986, when we were prevented from returning by the international situation. I think that I appreciate very much that Concordia has supported this. It has given us the right to bring some students, and we've had a number of students participate from varying majors. I've had music majors, I've had business majors, I've had pre-medical students, I've had history students, and of course I've had some students intending on the seminary who have all gone to Caesarea to get an introduction to field archaeology and also an introduction to that part of the world and a global education that is hard to do only in this country. I continue to enjoy my teaching as I look back on it. I think I recognize two major elements. One is the quality of students. We draw students who are maybe not sophisticated, but they're eager, they're hardworking, and a fine character. Secondly, I'm impressed by the quality of my colleagues on the faculty. People whom I have admired for a long time, who provide for me models of their own scholarship, of their own teaching ability, of their own dedication to the college. When I say faculty, I naturally think of them from first. I don't mean to exclude administrators. I remember very well the model that Carl Bailey as dean was, that Knutson was as president, Mr. Smaby in the business office, Mr. Rundahl in admissions. Very fine people, and I believe that's why Concordia has been so successful in what we try to do. When I came, Concordia had an enrollment of, I think, about 1,300. And none of the buildings that are now standing, built of this buff brick, were then there. One was going up, namely Park Region. It was going up, and the library was being built. I think the greatest disappointment I had in joining the Concordia faculty was I wanted to see the library. And so they took me up to the north end of the women's dormitory, Fjellset Hall, and took me down into the basement and said, this is the library. I was thunderstruck. But, of course, we were building the Ovasaka Library at that time. So that disappointment was a very short one.